this happen.
The American dream is dead. Stop resisting.
The president's powers here are beyond question.
Ladies and gentlemen, the last president of the United States.
Yes, it is Friday, September 14th, 2018. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to our capital muckraker in chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. Today's show, Hurricane Florence batters North Carolina and South Carolina, making landfall near Wilmington, North Carolina. It made landfall as a Category 1 hurricane, but that is not where all the danger lies. It comes with the rain. All the signs of climate change are there, as a slow, huge storm is dumping up to 3-plus feet of rain in some locations. The Trump administration, in preparation for such storms, transferred nearly $10 million from FEMA to ICE.
That's because the immigrants are using the hurricanes to get into the country.
And documents show, actually, that the Coast Guard will also be losing $14 million, also going to ICE.
Stop those immigrant hurricanes.
Trump calls Puerto Rican death toll a Democratic Party political tactic.
I only know of 18, not 3,000.
California Governor Jerry Brown announced the most ambitious climate change agenda in history. An executive order that will basically commit California to be carbon neutral by 2045. That announcement comes on the heels of recent state legislation committing California's electrical grid to go 100% clean energy by 2045. Unreal. Kavanaugh confirmation vote delayed, well, or something. There was some talk that it would happen on Thursday. Looks like now that's getting kicked out to September 20th. Dianne Feinstein, she's got a letter, got information about something that happened, maybe sexual misconduct with Kavanaugh back in high school. She won't show anybody the letter, except for the FBI. And now they're on it. I don't know what's going to happen next. But hey, made a lot of news. Apparently, Paul Manafort reached a plea deal with Mueller on his second felony trial. The deal is supposed to be announced today. Right? We checked right before we went online to see if it had been out yet, but no details yet. Big question about whether or not that deal includes cooperation with the inquiry. Andrew Cuomo survived Cynthia Nixon's challenge in the New York Democratic primary yesterday. The bigger loss in my mind was Zephyr Teachout. Really thought she had that shot. On the bright side, you got Julia Salazar winning big. Right, Julia Salazar kind of been compared to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez at the state level. Phenomenal. Also, six pro-Cuomo Democrats. Right. We'll get into this in the discussion. They were all ousted, right, by insurgent Democrats. These folks that was probably going to be a bigger hit to Andrew Cuomo than had he lost the. I don't know. We'll have to see about that. But anyways, we'll get into that. And next week, Michael Moore's new film, which you heard a little clip from in the intro today, Fahrenheit 11/9, hits theaters next week. Supposed to officially get released on Friday the 21st, right? However, it's premiering all over the area on Thursday. So check your local listings and get out there and see this thing. Agitprop done right. In today's Pennsylvania focus, the trash man cometh. Scott Wagner's Penn Waste uses local court districts as its own bill collection agency. I'm a self-made man, he says. The company has sued 7,000 customers over 10,000 times for being late on their bills. So, private industry, but it's all state, local, public contracts, and then he uses the court system to enforce it. Yeah. According to a new report released on Tuesday, more than half of the companies fracking in PA used secret chemicals in their fracking fluid. Secret meaning they're not telling anybody what's in them. And that means there's no way to tell what the health effects are of pumping chemicals into our water systems. On Monday, an Energy Partners pipeline, the Revolution pipeline, blew up. And that was out in Beaver County, destroying one home. Luckily, no one was injured, but the explosion draws attention to the kind of impacts and dangers of runaway fracking in the state. Hello, Governor Wolf. And each Stroudsburg teachers go on strike, closing schools for the week. Taking a page out of the teacher strikes in West Virginia and Oklahoma earlier this year, teachers invested time in a number of community service projects when not on the picket line. And, of course, I will have a mold update from Kutztown University. Mold is everywhere. In today's last call, SpaceX to announce the first commercial trip around the moon. That's going to happen on Monday, September 17th at 9 p.m. There's going to be a live stream. This is Elon Musk basically trying to distract himself from his Tesla woes and his, like, pot-smoking podcast appearances. That they're going to reveal the identity or the person or the people who's going to take a ride on BFG. Big fucking rocket. I mean, big Falcon rocket. BFG. BFR. BFG, that's a book. That's Big Friendly Giant. BFR. Luxembourg makes moves to be the commercial capital for space industries. We talked about this actually several months ago, that Luxembourg was moving this direction. Well, they're making it official. Free Will's got a double release this weekend. Sexy Goodies and The Pommisher. The Pommisher freaking rocks. That thing is amazing. They're also going to be out at the Scarecrow Fest all weekend long at Peddler's Village location. Got some great new beer tips from Out the Coop fan Tony. Tony, shout out to you. Looks like anti-worker Yingling has more than one challenger in Pottsville. Introducing Stoker Brewing Company in Tamaqua. Ooh, hey, that's Banditelli country. Shout out to the Banditellis. Stoker Brewing Company is having a Smoketoberfest coming September 22nd. We'll talk to you about that. And Tony, this is another one to Tony. Tony was also kind of gave us some clues in some of the history of Schuylkill County. Used to be four major breweries out there. Kind of cool, right? Maybe some ideas, he suggests, for a free range podcast. Want to remind everybody to tune in to the Rick Smith Show on Free Speech TV this and every Saturday at 7 p.m. You can stream the show live at freespeech.org. You can also tune in on the Dish Network, DirecTV, or through the Free Speech TV app on Roku. Want to thank all our supporters and members, everyone who's made Raging Chicken possible, made this podcast possible. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media, folks. And you can help by pull no punches, homegrown progressive media today. You can help by becoming a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. With the 2018 midterm elections right around the corner, we need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. The best way to do that, become a member of Raging Chicken Press by going to patreon.com/rcpress today. Sean, how's the week going, man?
It is going amazing.
Is it going swimmingly?
Yes, it is. And we're back in that hot and humid mess.
Oh, my God. This weather is horrible.
I know.
I guess there's going to be more of it, though, man. I'm telling you. It's like, so I guess we get sun for a couple of days, and then actually the remnants of Florence are coming right towards you.
Yeah. It's been fun watching the river. The river's up at like 15 feet again.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. It's a little higher than normal.
What's flood stage?
17.
17?
It'll basically take it to get to like 50 feet to get into my apartment. So it's not like it's that bad.
Yeah. As long as you're okay, screw everybody, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
As long as it doesn't affect you. No. But, man, it's, here you go, Hurricane Florence. It did make landfall this morning in Wilmington, North Carolina. It got downgraded to a Category 1 hurricane. They expected this to happen, right? It was a Category 4 when it was sitting off the coast. They expected it as it moved in closer to the shore that it was gonna be downgraded to a Category 2 and then a Category 1. And the threat for this one has always been, it hasn't been from the get-go, the concern about the winds as much, since they knew it was going to be downgraded. It has to do with the fact that it's moving at a snail's pace, like 5 miles an hour, which is basically just means that it's just dumping like buckets and buckets of rain everywhere. So you're talking about, we saw the same thing last year with Harvey, where, you know, it just sits there and dumps all the water and produces just crazy amounts of rain. So our thoughts are out to everybody down there. I hope everybody's safe. my mom and my uncle were just down there, actually. They were in Raleigh. My Uncle Jimmy, shout out to my Uncle Jimmy, he's on his last legs. He's been battling cancer for years. He lives actually in Florence, South Carolina, but he's up in the hospital in Raleigh, North Carolina. It was like 3 hours away from his home and things like this. And there was some question about whether or not my mom was actually going to still be there when this hit, but she's gone. And I just best wishes to my Uncle Jimmy and his family. And I hope they're going to get through this together. So, and that this is not going to complicate that things that much more than they already are. So there. So there you have it. So it's been that storm's been pretty crazy, man.
Yeah, no, I mean, it looks like these are going to be the type of storms to expect in the future. You know, this is another like monster sized hurricane. It's just going to be dumping a bunch of water in the area and stalling out. And it also like makes me begin to think like we're not like safe from this stuff anymore either.
Right.
I mean, we had Sandy and we had a couple of other like smaller hurricanes, but something like a Category 3 can easily come barreling into like the mid-Atlantic area. You know, obviously it would be downgraded by the time it hits into like Philadelphia or like out here in central PA, but like the amount of rain we've been getting,
right,
is something that you know, you don't need the wind or anything, but like the amount of rain we've been getting out here, it's like past 3 months is like an all-time record.
Well, it's interesting. You know, I mentioned this and we'll talk a little bit more about that. But even a perfect example of that is the that pipeline that exploded right out in Beaver County. There's some question, you know, again, who the hell knows what the, you know, comes out of the company's mouth. You can't believe anything about this thing. But said there was some sort of landslide in the area. And that's actually one of the, you know, one of the things that's happening with all this kind of rain is that you basically have these mudslides and landslides. Just the ground gives
roads are buckling and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. And you go, so these things go hand in hand, right? So, you know, not only you're talking about kind of like, you know, catastrophe, but the more that we have these kind of rains, like these rain events, the more that kind of stuff is going to happen. You can't, but you know, we already have an infrastructure that is falling apart, right? Nationwide. And when you start dumping like feet and feet of rain, like on a more consistent basis in the areas, it's just going to mess everything up.
Yeah.
So crazy. And so that was what, you know, it was like the news this week where that, you know, I got to hand it to Jeff Merkley, right? This guy, he was out in front on the ICE detentions of children, right? He went down there and he's the one who's out there kind of like blowing the whistle about the Trump administration basically transferring $10 million from FEMA, right? Who ostensibly would need it for disasters, right? But moving that money over to ICE, right? So instead of having to pay for it, right, you just take money from someone else to kind of shift it to ICE. And then they're talking about upwards of $14 million going to be pulled from the Coast Guard to move to ICE. And Merkley, man, he just kind of like, you know, he was on Rachel Maddow's show the other night, and he gave her gave them the documents. And that's kind of creased like this, I don't know, this revolving door, not revolving, that's the wrong word, but this kind of like several reports that have come out kind of exposing this stuff. So, man, you know, kudos to Merkley.
Yeah, you got to wonder if he's going to stop getting the receipts at some point.
Yeah, right?
If they're going to be cutting him off from that type of information.
Yeah, well, but, you know, maybe maybe some people in the Democratic caucus in the Senate are going to be like, you know what, Chuck, you look a little tired. You know, Jeff Merkley over here, he seems to got a lot of energy. Why don't you just take a break for a while, Schumer? And we'll have Merkley come in here for a little bit because he seems to have an agenda, right?
I don't see that happening,
no,
unfortunately.
No, but come on, one can hope.
Yeah, no, one can hope.
One can hope.
But it just shows you how we're prioritizing.
Yep.
You know, two things meant for natural disasters, like what's going to happen in South Carolina in a day or two.
Yep.
And I mean, also it's the type of thing where if this hits a state like New York or New Jersey, two states that voted for Clinton, or say Pennsylvania, you know, gets damaged from this. Are we not going to get the aid we need because these are Democratic states, these are blue states, or because Philadelphia and Pittsburgh are sanctuary cities?
That's a good point. That's a good point. It's a good question. I mean, especially, yeah.
This hurricane's hitting states that vote for Trump anyway, so, I mean, they're going to get, you know, the government, you know, aid that they need, but...
Well, we'll see. I don't even know if that's going to happen. We'll see.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they're gonna try to make a better show of it, right? But I mean, you know, maybe he'll be down there with his paper towel cannon.
Maybe Scott Wagner will be down there taking pictures with the flood damage.
No, actually, there's white people down there, right? So he might go down there.
Yeah,
not like Governor Wolf going to Puerto Rico, right? So yeah, we'll see. That'd be interesting to see what happened if he actually goes down there.
Speaking
awesome.
Of Puerto Rico.
Yeah, speaking of Puerto Rico, Trump this week, basically, you know, last week, we talked about this last week on the show where have, you know.
And this number's been out there for months now. It's 3,000 death toll.
Right. The only reason he's talking about it now is because of Florence, right? He's basically because now they're drawing the comparisons and basically saying, like, look, you're pulling this money away from FEMA that's going to ICE, right? You're kind of not going to be prepared. Look what you did. It was a complete disaster that happened in Puerto Rico. And so then Trump starts kind of like, for whatever, you know, I'm sure it was mentioned on Fox and Friends, right? And then it kind of got into his craw and got into his panties, and then he couldn't take it anymore. So he had to kind of go tweet about it. And basically saying, I don't know, when I was down there, there was only like, I don't know, 6 or 18 like people. Then it maybe went as high as 65. But then suddenly all the numbers started being added. Even like when a grandma died, they just added it to the figure. Right. I mean, I was like, holy fuck. Right. And so you've got 3,000 people who lost their lives as a result of the devastation wrought by Hurricane Maria. And this guy is like denying those deaths. Right. And these are like. That's just unbelievable. That is unbelievable. And I think that, you know, again, we'll see, right? Because, look, I mean, Trump is only interested, right, and is only going to kind of put any kind of national spotlight on it when there's, like, you know, there's sexy stuff to do, right? I mean, you even see when he was throwing his paper towels off to the crowd of people, that kind of was kind of boring to him, right? If he could go out with a jacket and stand in the wind or something like that by a plane, right, then, there's his TV spot. But having to stick around and deal with people who have germs, especially if they're not white, right, as he still basically can't kind of get his head around the fact that there's actually Americans in Puerto Rico.
And it also, it amazes me that this hasn't been made as big of an issue as Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah, more people have lost their lives from Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico.
It's because Puerto Rico is an island like 1,000 miles away from here. No one wants to be there, like stuck on an island with no power, reporting on this.
Well, I mean, it's also...
And showing the day-to-day devastation.
Well, there's part of that, right? But the other part of it is also the fact that, look, like how often do you ever see stories about Puerto Rico in like as part of like the United States, right? As a commonwealth, right? I mean, how often do you see that in kind of evening news reporting? I mean, we don't know anything about this. This has to go with our historical amnesia and refusal to deal with kind of a pseudo or quasi colonial past where we started to become the kind of like the imperial force. Right. And so we still have these territories around the world. Right. That we don't even like know exist. Right. And they don't get reported on. So that, you know, it's not only the fault of like a limited education system that kind of that we don't know this stuff like on a routine basis, but it's also kind of said that, you know, the media doesn't pay attention to it either. So it's easy for Trump, right? It's easy for them to basically, you know, ignore it because most people have ignored it like every day of their life up until then.
Yeah.
But you know about New Orleans, right?
Yeah.
Right. You know about the beads in New Orleans, right? I mean, you know, there's a difference, right? It's crazy, crazy, crazy. So now, I don't know how much you saw this, Sean, but did you check out all this stuff that was that what Jerry Brown did in California?
No, I did not.
So, I mean, this was pretty amazing. Now, there's, I have to have one little slight caveat to all of this because there was a global climate action summit that's taking place actually right now, right? So it's actually, it ends today. And Jerry Brown, Governor Jerry Brown of California, was kind of opening the ceremonies, right? And he was kind of kicking it off. And there's all this kind of jockeying that's going on in California state politics, which, to be honest with you, I don't have all the pieces figured out. Like, I don't kind of fully have my head wrapped around it. But I know that there's, like, you know, contentions within the party. There's a kind of, again, strong progressive movement happening in the state. Jerry Brown, again, he's always been very good at kind of keeping his progressive credentials kind of, like, out in front, right? So he seems like this kind of, like, progressive populist, but that he's also got some really conservative streaks, especially when it comes to kind of policing and the oil and gas industry, ironically. But anyways, so there's this back and forth of what was going on, and Jerry Brown wanted to have legislation that would tie California's electrical grid into the global electrical grid. And why that was the case, I'm not exactly sure. There's some references. They're suggesting that it had something to do with his ties, or I don't know. I don't know exactly. But that piece of legislation got shot down, right? There was a separate piece of legislation that was basically saying we wanted California's electrical grid to be 100% zero carbon electricity by 2045, right? And that was being put through by this guy, Senator Kevin De Leon, right, who is an antagonist to Brown, apparently. Right, so Brown was actually threatening, said, "Hey, look, you know, if we don't, you know, I'll potentially go ahead and veto that if we don't get this other thing." But it didn't work out that way. In fact, his bill never passed. The one that he wanted, the one that Jerry Brown wanted to get passed, to kind of tie in California's energy grid to a larger Western power market, that failed. Right, but the bill to commit California to 100% use of zero carbon electricity, that one passed, and so Brown basically, you know, he threatened maybe he's going to veto, but he didn't do it. But then he got to the summit, right? And you know, he was championing this this legislation, right? So now that it's passed, he's going to actually, you know, find a way to take credit for it to a certain degree, and he does. And I'm being a little bit, you know, cynical about his motives there, but so he does that, and then to most people's surprise, then he says, we're going to go one step further. He's going to put together an executive order, and he's going to commit California to total economy-wide carbon neutrality by 2045, right? So that piece of legislation was only for the electrical grid. Now he's saying everything, right? And that's huge. You're talking about in 20 years, right? That would completely shift everything, right? You're talking about the world's fifth largest economy, and if that would happen, that would have a huge impact. Now, again, it's an executive order, it's not legislation, so that it could be overturned pretty easily, but at least at staking out ground, that was pretty impressive.
So do you want me to, like, be Debbie Downer right now?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, so you want to hear what Tom Wolf did a couple weeks ago? Mm-hmm. That sort of went under the radar.
Mm-hmm.
He gave a $1 million RCAP grant to reopen an anthracite coal mine in Columbia County.
Yeah, that is pretty Debbie Downer.
So, yeah, no.
So, like, so basically, what's he doing? Is this going to be like a California offset?
Yeah.
We want to make sure there's not too much success of what's happened out in California. So we need to take things backwards.
We're bringing coal back. So basically, RCAP grants come from the state government office for usually, like, redevelopment and stuff like that. So he said, because this is actually picked up, this was actually talked about for, like, a little bit, but no one major really picked up on it. I will continue to partner with industry and local communities to ensure that our Commonwealth reaps the greatest possible benefit from our resources so that our communities, our industries, and our workforce can thrive, and Pennsylvania will remain competitive in the manufacturing economy.
That's so fucking wrong. It's so wrong. It's so wrong.
Yeah.
You know, you
$1 million grant to reopen up a coal mine.
You know what's especially troubling about that and extra downer about that is, like, here's, you got an opportunity, right? And this is a perfect example of, like, the fight in the Democratic Party, right? The perfect example of this is that you've got the opportunity here to draw a nice, clean line, right?
Like, it's fucking coal.
Yeah. No, no. I mean, against, you're in an election year, right? Against your opponent, right? And basically saying, I am the future, and this is the direction we're going to take it. But instead, you do this freaking, like, you know, Clintonian Democrat crap of, you try to kind of usurp the center. You want to be more like pro coal than the asshole on the other side. I mean, that's what just that drives me nuts. So instead of looking towards the future, you're just looking to play internal politics. And, you know, especially this year, if the fact is that if Wolf is so ahead in the polls at this point, right, he could have done that. Right. Draw that clean line. But whatever. Yeah, that was a downer, man. Thank you for that. I totally missed that this week.
Yes.
Oh, man. Oh, man. Wolf. Well, this week we also saw the end of the closing of the Kavanaugh confirmation hearings. And, I mean, Kavanaugh did show everybody that he has some trouble using words. That was kind of amusing, to say the least. I thought it was kind of remarkable. I mean, I don't know how much of the hearings you watched, but I was just kind of taken back by the fact that here you got a guy who's been, you know, a judge for a certain period of time, worked in politics for years. And when he was confronted with kind of direct questions about things he should have pretty easy answers to, he just made it hard for people to support him. I mean, it was pretty wild. And it's pretty clear the guy has lied to the Senate in multiple occasions now, right, that he's got all sorts of dealings. Apparently in the written questions, this didn't come up in the hearing itself, but there was a whole bunch of questions written to him afterwards about asking him questions about his gambling. Do you remember early on he had hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. And then once he was going to get the nomination, suddenly that debt went away. Disappeared. And so, like, who paid off that debt and who do you owe because of it? And he just kind of saying, I don't have a gambling, I don't gamble, you know, I mean, it's whatever. But, you know, again, this is a political appointment, so unless there's going to be two Republicans that peel off, and I think Murkowski might peel off, but Susan Collins seems to want to kind of double down and still pretend that she's pro-choice.
Absolutely love the crowd pack.
The what's that?
Did you see the crowd pack, crowdsource in Maine that's going on?
Yes. That's awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, you hear what she called it?
A bribe.
She calls it a bribe. Exactly. Whole bunch of small dollar donations kind of working to lobby her, to kind of push her and to kind of not vote for Kavanaugh's confirmation. That's basically a bribe. Whatever, man. It's like, really?
We will give $3 million to the winner of the primary.
Yep. Yep.
Have the people fight for it. All right.
Yep. Go for it. Who's going to do it? That's nuts. But what do you know? You look, I mean, she's played this game for a long time, right? She's basically been, you know, but I am a pro-choice Republican woman. Right. And
which, like, how much more fucking clearly did he make it when he called birth control abortion inducing medicine?
No, exactly. Exactly.
I mean, could it be any more fucking clear than that?
This is, like, why it's got to strip away any pretense that Susan Collins, you know, can lay claim to, that she's somehow pro-choice. She's always equivocated on this stuff. Right. She's always then kind of said, like, well, you know, especially when it comes to judges. Well, you know, they've convinced me. They sound reasonable, whatever. And she tried to do the same with Kavanaugh. And now it's going to be really hard for her to do it. So, you know, look, it's awesome. Have you ever seen, do you know, what's her name? I'll come back to it another time. But, yeah, so we'll see what happens with that. She's definitely feeling the pressure. Murkowski, you know, Mazie Hirono, we talked about this last week on the podcast. She basically raised the issue about Kavanaugh saying that, you know, Native Hawaiians don't have any rights, right? Don't deserve any kind of, like, you know, assistance, a whole bunch of stuff like this. And then Hirono basically calls out her friends from Alaska might also be concerned about this, because it turns out that Murkowski right? She like lost her primary basically to this kind of right wing nut job, right? So she had to do a writing campaign, and one of her major supporting groups that actually got her elected were some indigenous peoples, right? The tribes up in that area who will now. They just had a big meeting apparently yesterday or the day before with Murkowski, because they have come out now and said no we should not back this guy. So that's going to be really interesting, because she owes her political life to those constituents. So you know, we'll see where that goes. But you know, again, I think it's, we're going to plow ahead. We're going to get a guy who's corrupt, who's purged himself, and who is committed to end Roe v. Wade, because this is a political process, right? And say it with me, everybody, elections have consequences, right? So we're going to keep on playing that card over and over again. So, yeah, don't have much to say about the Paul Manafort thing today, just because we're waiting on a plea deal. We don't know what it actually is going to be, so there's been a bunch of reporting on it. But when that comes through, maybe we'll talk about that a little bit next week and see if there's going to be any kind of real impact, or if it's just going to be, you know, Paul Manafort, bad man, as we've known. Right? The big news, like last night, there was a lot of hopes for the primaries. New York State had the last primary of the season, electoral season. And there was big hopes on Cynthia Nixon running against Cuomo, although everyone kind of pretty much recognized that that was going to be a huge uphill battle, because Cuomo was so entrenched in the state. But then also for the attorney general, there was for our Zephyr Teachout, and both Cynthia Nixon and Zephyr Teachout lost. So that was a bit of a Debbie Downer, if you will, for the primaries yesterday. But there were some bright sides to it, Sean.
Yeah, no, the IDC Democrats, the Democrats who joined the Republicans for the past 8 years, have been knocked out. Seven of eight got kicked out.
Was it seven? I thought it was six.
I think it was seven this morning I saw.
Maybe the final results came in. Yeah, that's freaking awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, so people don't know New York politics, right? So basically, this is Cuomo's play to basically stave off any kind of progressive legislation or progressive movements, and also some of the nutjobs on the right. But basically, he had handpicked a bunch of Democrats that he strong-armed them to kind of join this group of Republicans, right, to form this kind of coalition that would basically be, you know, in his back pocket. All right. And if you know, I mean, this is, you know, Sean and I were talking about this before the show. In New York State politics, it's kind of like, you know, three-tier chess, right? Where, you know, kind of like political playing, you know, it's a game, and the corruption is deep, right? And it's power politics when it gets nasty. And so for the longest time, any kind of progressive legislation in the state was stymied by this group of Democrats. And people had enough. And they're gone, right?
And they just crumbled.
Yeah, and they just crumbled.
And yeah, this is what taking out the trash looks like.
Yep.
And you know, it's going to be interesting to see, like, when you think about states that have like extremely horrible voting records.
Yep.
You would think like some of them are, if not all of them, are these like backwater, backwash like southern states. For New York being a progressive state, it probably has one of the worst election systems in the country.
Oh my God, it's horrible.
Like, it is completely designed to keep people from voting and to keep incumbents in power. I mean, three separate primaries.
Yep.
Is sort of, it's fucking ridiculous.
What's wrong with that, Sean? Everybody gets their own. Everybody gets one. What's wrong with that?
And the congressional primaries are only open. Well, no, like, the congressional primaries are from like 12 to 8. So it's not even open up during like morning hours when people can actually vote.
Yep.
I mean, yeah, it just amazes me how fucking horrible.
Yeah, it's all machine politics. It's all designed to kind of keep like the inside game, to keep incumbents in power, and to be controlled from the top. Right. I mean, look, it's like the echo of New York State's mob history. Right. I mean, really, that's what it is. And you know, that's getting blown up right now, which is awesome.
Yeah, right. I know. Maybe like in the future, because of the IDC Democrats getting kicked out, you can have actual,
exactly,
but just actual like voting reforms.
That's exactly it. Because I mean, this is what I'm wondering. You know, what we're going to see now, right? With those folks cleared out, right? What's going to happen now in terms of how the state legislature in New York gets reconfigured? Are we going to see kind of a more solidly progressive agenda come out? And then what's Cuomo going to do in response to that?
So, yeah.
So crazy. The other thing, too, good shout out to kind of Julia Salazar. You know, she was kind of like tapped as the kind of the next Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And she just boom, she blew out that race and kind of won that seat, too, as well. Another DSA supported candidate from New York. So awesome.
Yes. And she had a lot of ugly oppo dumped on her in the past flight. Lead up to this race too.
Yeah, what was the? I didn't follow it as closely as I wanted to, and I haven't been able to catch up. So what happened?
A lot of it breeds from Jewish politics. Ocasio-Cortez, about her background of being Jewish and stuff like that. I don't want to get into it because it's like it's just a very complicated issue. Mm-hmm. But like some of it had to deal with her. Reports claims she was sexually assaulted from someone from an Israeli office. They were trying to discredit her from. She had an issue with Keith Hernandez from the Mets. Supposedly, she was involved with some sort of like affair with him while his marriage was crumbling. Like just really odd oppo stuff that came out against her. Like she was involved in a lawsuit with Keith Hernandez's like ex-wife. But she was never charged with a crime or found guilty of anything. So they were trying to use that, like her being set up as proof that she was arrested, and then just use like shitty oppo to try to tank her campaign.
Yeah, I heard it got really
it got ugly. Yeah, it got really ugly.
But she fell through. So
yeah, and it didn't work.
No, it did not work. Right, and that's everything to do with organizing on the ground. I mean, really is what it came down to.
Yeah.
cool.
And yeah.
Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Well, people were talking about Salazar from going back from the primary before that. Like Roxbury has a video up on his website of him from the Ocasio-Cortez page or post party, and Salazar was there and they were all talking at that point, and people were saying she was going to be the next one.
Well, there we have it. So I'm kind of close out this section. It's like Michael Moore, right? If you're not familiar with Michael Moore, you should familiarize yourself with him, right? So this would be Sean. Make sure you watch every Michael Moore movie there is, right? If you haven't already, right?
I have not watched. Really, I've only watched like one or two.
Have you watched Roger and Me?
No, I have not.
You need to watch Roger and Me. Right. So that's my suggestion, right? I mean, if you're going to be like the holdout when it comes to the Star Trek and Star Wars, at least for Christ's sake, watch Michael Moore's movies, will you? Roger and Me was his first one that it kind of came out that kind of based in Flint and like a destruction of the kind of the economy, industrial economy, whatever. Fahrenheit 9/11, right, was about the Iraq War, lead up to the Iraq War, which that documentary broke every record for a documentary film in history in terms of sales. And it broke all those records despite being closed out of every national movie chain at the beginning. So it ran in like art house films and art house theaters and small theaters, independently owned theaters across the country. And it just blew every record out of the water. So this is kind of like a, you know, speaking the same kind of language, right? Again, it's kind of agitprop documentary films. And this one's called Fahrenheit 11/9, right, for Election Day, right? So this is actually looking at what's happened with Trump, right? So he's been doing the interview circuit. It's been fantastic. You heard a little bit of clip from the trailer at the beginning of the show today. It was kind of in our intro. And people should get out and see this, right? I think it's going to help galvanize a lot of people, right? And you couldn't place it a better time in terms of like the election cycle that this is actually going to be hitting the theaters and getting people kind of rallied up. One of the reasons why I think that Michael Moore is so important in all this, right, is Michael Moore basically called, he's one of the few people who called the Trump election, right? He saw what was happening in his hometown of Flint, Michigan, and all throughout Michigan, particularly within kind of, this is kind of cliche at this point, but white working class areas, but in particular, former middle class areas, right, that were kind of industrial and that were just being wrecked by Republicans and Democrats alike. And there was a speech that he gave that I'm going to play a clip for you as we lead to the break. There was a speech that he gave, I think it was October 25th, 2016. So this is before the election, right? And he had been basically shouting pants on fire, like the fire's over here, to the Democrats about what was about to happen, particularly in the kind of industrial Midwest. And saying that you people don't understand, you're not getting, the Democratic Party would not listen to him, right? He was kind of dismissed by many commentators, just kind of like, yeah, whatever. He's just kind of being, being Michael Moore, right? He's kind of being extreme and all that kind of stuff. They dismissed him, but he was dead on, right? And so I want to play this little speech we lead into the break. This is a segment of his speech that when I heard it at the time, it gave me freaking chills, right? And this was the kind of thing, when I heard him talking about this stuff, I had a feeling that this kind of stuff was going on. And it made me skeptical right up until election day, really, that Clinton was going to win. I like most people, at the last minute, like the last day before the election, I was like, okay, I'm going to trust the polls, right? Nope. I was wrong. But Michael Moore didn't right up until that day. So here is just kind of a little bit of a sobering window into something that Michael Moore wrote. He was speaking at this event in Ohio, and he wrote this thing that was a kind of a way to kind of try to understand, try to explain what was about to happen on election day and what was coming down the pike, right, and why people were feeling this way. So we're going to leave you with this moving into the break. This is Michael Moore on October 25th, I believe, speaking in Ohio, a week or so before the election.
You live here in Ohio. You know what I'm talking about. Whether Trump means it or not is kind of irrelevant because he's saying the things to people who are hurting. And it's why every beaten down, nameless, forgotten working stiff who used to be part of what was called the middle class loves Trump. He is the human Molotov cocktail that they've been waiting for. The human hand grenade that they can legally throw into the system that stole their lives from them. And on November 8th, Election Day, although they've lost their jobs, although they've been foreclosed on by the bank, next came the divorce, and now the wife and kids are gone, the car's been repoed, they haven't had a real vacation in years. They're stuck with the shitty Obamacare bronze plan where you can't even get a fucking Percocet. They've essentially lost everything they had except one thing. The one thing that doesn't cost them a cent and is guaranteed to them by the American Constitution, the right to vote. So on November 8th, the dispossessed will walk into the voting booth, be handed a ballot, close the curtain, and take that lever, or felt pen, or touchscreen, and put a big fucking X in the box by the name of the man who has threatened to upend and overturn the very system that has ruined their lives, Donald J. Trump. They see that the elites who ruined their lives hate Trump. Corporate America hates Trump. Wall Street hates Trump. The career politicians hate Trump. The media hates Trump after they loved him and created him and now hate him. Thank you, media. The enemy of my enemy is who I'm voting for on November 8th. Yes, on November 8th, you, Joe Blow, Steve Blow, Bob Blow, Billy Blow, Billy Bob Blow, all the Blows get to go and blow up the whole goddamn system because it's your right. Trump's election is going to be the biggest fuck you ever recorded in human history. And it will feel good.
We'll be right back, folks.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1917. That was the day Illinois Governor Frank Loudon hoped to meet with striking streetcarmen in an effort to end their strike. Transit workers in Springfield, the state's capital, had been off the job since July 25th. But the strike had gained so much support that Springfield had now erupted into a full-blown general strike. According to the Sangamon County Historical Society, thousands of union members shut down mines, railroads, bakeries, restaurants, laundries, and construction sites following the violent crackdown of a pro-labor march by state police and militia. The march had been scheduled for September 9th. The union hoped to show support for the striking streetcarmen after a number of clashes between strikers and state militia. After they were denied a permit, many of the 50 or so unions decided to march anyway and were attacked. Some were shot. More than 40 suffered bayonet-inflicted injuries. By the 11th, most everyone in Springfield had walked off the job. Striking women shoe factory workers stopped a streetcar, pulling the scab drivers off by force. By the end of the week, as many as 12,000 members of 34 unions in the city were on strike. When telephone operators walked off the job, they paralyzed communications of the scab streetcar drivers and the state National Guardsmen. The streetcar strikers refused to meet with the governor until troops were withdrawn from the city. The governor insisted disloyal, pro-German forces were at fault for the labor troubles. By the 16th, the streetcarmen agreed to negotiate and the general strike was called off. But the company refused to meet striker demands for recognition and higher wages or even take them back.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
I'm in a waste management business. Everybody immediately assumes you're mobbed up. It's a stereotype, and it's offensive.
Welcome back to Ragey Jenkins Out the Coop podcast. Yes, that is Senator Soprano. I mean, Wagner, former Senator Wagner is himself. Sean, the trash man cometh.
Yep. like an interesting story was published this morning before we came on from Penn Live about Scott Wagner suing thousands of customers because they're behind on their trash bill. Like 7,000.
7,000 people was sued by Scott Wagner's Penn Waste.
Yeah, a total of over 10,000 times.
That's nice. So that should make people like him quite a bit, right? Makes him a little bit of a local celebrity of sorts.
Yeah, a little bit. And he did this, for people who are like behind on their trash bill. They're like $100, $150 behind on their bill. And he's claiming this is just a standard industry practice.
There you go. There it goes. So this is a report that comes from Jan Murphy in Penn Live today. So this is how it's framed. So it says, Pennsylvania's fall gubernatorial campaign is getting nastier. A billboard that went up on Tuesday evening in the Harrisburg area accuses GOP gubernatorial candidate Scott Wagner of being heavy-handed with customers of his trash hauling company who won't pay their bill. It states, quote, Scott Wagner's Penn Waste sued 6,979 Pennsylvanians. Learn why. And it provides a web address for PennWasteAlert.com. PennWasteAlert.com. The website accuses Wagner's business of using strong-arm tactics and repeatedly violating state environmental rules. The billboard, which is visible along Route 581 westbound near the ramp for I-83 South, was paid for by a Democratic-leaning advocacy group called PA Spotlight. The group was purchased four other billboards that will go up in locations in York and Dauphin counties. I just can hope that they're visible from his house, right? Or right outside Penn Waste would be freaking awesome. But you know what? I mean, this kind of stuff, you know, I'm happy to see this stuff, right? Because you know, I worry at like all hell when you see the polls that are showing like that Tom Wolf has got such a lead here. Right. That's such a lead. And then it seems to me that in the past, what's happened is that, you know, Democrats, right, or people on the left in general, I mean, they just kind of like, OK, well, we can kind of coast to the finish here. Right?
Pack it up. It's, you know, 60 days from the election. We got this thing in the bag and
yeah,
time to go home.
Time to go back to brunch. Right. I mean, and instead it's like, no. I mean, I see this kind of stuff. I'm like, that's right. Buried a guy, right? I mean, you've got someone on the ropes. You don't kind of say like, are you okay? Well, I'm just gonna, you know, why don't you take a break? No,
to quote Scott Wagner, when you got your foot on his neck,
exactly,
said it from the man himself.
Right. And again, this, you know, again, I would not be saying this in any kind, in every single political race, but you've got someone who is so horrible as Scott Wagner. Right. And we should have learned our lesson, right, from 2016, right, with Donald Trump there and all his all his ilk who have now kind of like entered electoral politics now, that you've got to, I mean, cockroaches don't die on the first stomp. Right. So you got to freaking make sure they're dead.
Trample it.
Right. And I'm speaking figuratively here, folks. Right. Of course, I mean, we're going to make sure that this election is in the bag. And that means fighting nonstop right up until the election. And the fact that because look, this guy, the fact he's not releasing his tax returns, the fact that he's, you know, he's like just been horrific to a whole range of people, to see this stuff start coming out, which is good. Right. And, you know, again, this is the thing. You don't like it, Scotty boy. I don't know what to tell you, because, you know, this is what happens. Right. You want to run for election. You want to be the big guy on top. Well, you're going to get scrutiny. Right. And sometimes scrutiny is a little uncomfortable and it might hurt you and give you a little boo boo. So there you have it. So I'm glad to see this. You know, I mean, my issue is all, you know, again, I always come back to this, like, you know, again, billboards are good. Right. And I hope that is I hope we're going to see this on the ground at a lot of locations. Right. That people are going to be organizing around this, too, as well. I also get nervous when we see, you know, we see the good strong hit kind of coming here with a billboard and stuff. But I also get concerned to say like, okay, but billboards are not a substitute for on the ground organizing, right? So,
no.
So
also, I think a really good point to this story is another thing that like these are services that were once publicly owned.
Yes.
And your municipality, you know, you always had to pay your bill, right? You can't just skip out on your bills. But your municipality would never send the sheriff's office to start, you know, iteming or monetizing assets in order to pay Wagner back, like for a bill that's like $150. Like, you know, this, like these things have consequences. Like, you know, like what happened back in York County back in before the primary, family person was, you know, they fell on tough times a little bit, missed paying their bill for it by a couple months, and like one day the sheriff's office was sent there by Penn Waste to start item listing their assets to get up to $150. And and since the sheriff showed up, you're then paying an extra like $200 for their services.
It's sick.
Like this is what happens when we privatize
this
stuff.
Yes, exactly. This is exactly it, right? So it was a formally, we were talking, and you know, and the fact is, right? And the fact that we don't get to scrutinize this guy's finances here. The thing was, is that when you publicly own, what kind of trash services are publicly owned, right, in any municipality, or electrical service, whatever you're going to talk about, right? You have access to those records, right? And people's salaries, right? And people's benefits and people's, like, you know, kickbacks that come in, anything like that, that is part of a public record. The minute that those things go private, right, we no longer have access to those, to that information, right? And so Wagner is like the poster boy for this crap, right? Because that's how he made his money. Right. The guy made his money by kind of like, yes, you start this private trash company, but you go around and you basically take over, right, take over like publicly owned facilities and kind of get them to privatize it, contract out to you. Right. And then we as individuals, right, we as citizens of the state get doubly screwed, because not only do we know, we don't know where our money's going. And, you know, again, there's a reason why he doesn't want his workers to know how much he makes. Right. Because the guy, because, you know, if they do that, then they, damn well they're going to unionize. Right. And they're probably like, what the hell did we do by giving this asshole, right, our stuff to begin with? So So this is good stuff, man. This is good stuff. I expect that the fact that he has made so many blunders, right, about kind of like, you know, calling that one woman young and naive, right, about kind of like
the plumbing, the transgender, the gay marriage issues, the abortion stuff, the meeting with the Moon families,
saying Tom Wolf, it was bullshit that he went to Puerto Rico to, you know, I mean, all this stuff. The fact is that he's stepping in his aides. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the fact that he's stepping in this stuff all over the place is, I think, even bringing more scrutiny down on him. And good, good, good.
Yeah. You know, it's what happens when you run for office.
Yeah. So that's what happens when you run for office. So
also, something else I forgot to put in notes. The Pennsylvania GOP, the state Republican Party, is suing or is challenging Lancaster Stands Up in court.
Really?
Yes. Claiming that they are working hand in hand with the Jess King campaign because of some of the relationships between people on the King campaign and their connections with Lancaster Stands Up and vice versa.
So they're going. So wait. So they're going after like as kind of like campaign finance stuff or what?
When they're illegally collaborating. Pull the story up real quick, but it just shows you how desperate. It shows you how it's campaign finance complaint against Lancaster Stands Up.
Interesting.
Basically, that there's too much cooperation between the two parties going on. And, you know, it just shows you how they're scared that Smucker's going to lose.
Yep, it's interesting. And what you it shows you that. Yep.
I mean, they're in a district that's like R15, you know, very heavily favored for Republicans. But Smucker hasn't had his face out there at all during this campaign season. And this is a way of attacking Jess King.
Well, and Jess King's been everywhere, too. I mean, she's been nonstop campaigning, from what I understand.
Yeah, so.
Crazy. But you know, that just brings up, you know, I think, okay, there's all these problems in Pennsylvania. But I think one of the bigger problems, and we don't have this in the show notes for today. We didn't talk about it. But I think that, you know, there's too much populism, I think.
Yes.
I think that we've got a major crisis in the state of Pennsylvania, and we need to get it away from populism. What do you say?
Yes. Yes. And defend elitism.
I think definitely we have to defend elitism. We have to get away from populism. And by every stretch of the imagination, there's no way that John Fetterman should be allowed to run in the Democrat.
Because he's too populist.
He's too populist. That's right.
So Democrats have to denounce Trump's populism and then have to break away from Fetterman's populism at the same time.
That's right, because any kind of policy that is kind of supportive of kind of large groups of people has to be bad. You need to keep it in the hands of the experts and the elitist and the donors.
But like Trump didn't run on populism. Like he ran on racism, which...
Exactly.
The tenets of National Socialism, dude.
Exactly. So you want to tell people what the hell we're talking about?
Yes. Yeah. So Penn Live's been taking op-eds from people, and one of them is Nick Soane's, which I normally don't like punch down on what people write, especially because it's just like you don't sort of like eat your own, except when like the intellectual when you're being intellectually dishonest.
Yes.
And yeah, and this was like one of those cases. You know, it makes me think I should start submitting op-eds for Penn Live.
Yeah, I think so. I think you should.
I mean, it would be pretty interesting to see if they start publishing them.
Yeah, but I mean, again, this goes to a very particular type of, and this is, I mean, I like the way you framed it, right? Because it's like, you know, when you're being intellectually dishonest about stuff and you're being just simply opportunistic, right, for the sake of
And this person is already working for to get the Los Angeles mayor, Garcetti, on the ballot in Pennsylvania for president in 2020. So.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Interesting.
Funny how that's not spelled out in the article.
Yeah, that's funny about that. And the reason I draw attention to that is because, you know, I hear you say you don't want to eat your own, and the left has got a long history of kind of like, you know, going after it. But the fact is like what his op-ed calls for is a write-in campaign to stop Fetterman, right? And that is unbelievable. I mean, for anybody who's like
I'm so much of a Democrat where I'm going to advocate for Republicans getting elected to office, sort of like what Dan Leach is doing right now down in.
Yeah, exactly. as like looking for a way to hand things over to like they. And again, let's be clear. I think that the influence of that op-ed is going to be like maybe it might move things like a 1/1000th of a percentage point with the three other people who think like that, like as ridiculous as that is, right? So
it's funny to put calls out on Facebook though.
Well, yeah, but it's just like it's also
got the attention where it deserves. Like this op-ed is fucking stupid.
Look, and he wants to work on somebody's political campaign coming up, right? Guess what? You're going to tie your name to it, right? So everybody in this state is going to know, right, that this is what you're advocating for, and you're going to damage the candidate that you're working for because you've been such an idiot about this stuff, right? Yeah. So, you know, and I'm sure that in his mind, he thinks he's kind of like, you know, paving the way for, you know, a return of conservative Democrats to the state, right? You know, ones who look nice and have nice suits, right? All this kind of crap. That just drives me nuts. And I hate that mode of politics. And I hate the fact that, you know, you've got to deal with this kind of garbage. They're trying to kind of basically torpedo a campaign, right? One that has real hopes of having major impact on God, thousands of people in the state.
Yeah. And like run an awesome campaign for the better of the state and the betterment of the party.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So. Whatever, man. So there you go. I couldn't help it. I couldn't help it, but there you go. Stuff to pay attention to here, folks. That there's a new report that was released on Tuesday that's basically showing that more than half of the companies that are fracking in PA are using kind of secret chemicals in their fracking fluid. And this is important, right? It's important because that a lot of these chemicals are cancer-causing, right? Which the suspected chemicals, we don't know for sure. Right. But the EPA, you know, so if you look at of 153 new chemicals proposed, and this is from State Impact Report on this, of 153 new chemicals proposed between 1999 and 2014, EPA had health concerns such as lung and skin irritation and neurotoxicity of about 109 of them, but allowed 62 to be used in oil and gas wells. Right. So that, again, there's an approval of this. Right. And again, without getting into all the kind of like backroom dealings on that one, they've been approved that. So it's a good chance that some of these chemicals are being used at least by some of these companies, right? And the fact that we are prevented as a public from knowing what is going into our water and what's going into our aquifers and our water tables is really disturbing. And you know, this is the kind of thing where there should be incredibly strong pushback, right, at the state level, right? So again, these elections have consequences. Here's another perfect example of this. And that, you know, at the very minimum, right, no matter where you fall on the whole, like, you know, natural gas thing, which, you know, I personally, as you know, if you've been listening to this, I think it's a freaking disaster what we're doing in this state. But whatever, even if you think like, okay, we tax the drillers and that will solve our problems in the future, at the very least, right, the people we should not be dumping on people in poor communities where a lot of these pipelines are going through and saying it's okay for you to die so that we can get the bridge fuel, which is a load of crap to begin with. But that's essentially what's going on. It's a repeat of the kind of pattern that has happened in Pennsylvania, where the people that are least powerful are the ones that are going to get dumped on, literally, right, and poisoned by this stuff. So, you know, again, more disturbing stuff there. And you take that next to the fact that Energy Partners, like the Energy Partners pipeline, the Revolution pipeline, blew up in Beaver County this week, right? Should just underscore that fact, right? I mean, if you can't see the like chemicals leaching into the water table, you can see the freaking mushroom cloud, okay?
Right? I mean, I think they should just like give them coupons for free pizza. And soda?
Yeah, right, exactly. Everything will be fine.
I just tell everything's okay.
Exactly. Exactly. You know what? You know what, Sean? Why don't we throw in free delivery, too?
Yeah.
Free delivery.
No one died this time, so.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, man. Yeah, that was a crazy story.
But no, I mean, like, I saw one of the lobbyists for Sunoco Pipelines in the Capitol the other day, and he was just, like, running around putting out fires with this.
Yeah,
figuratively, no pun intended.
Right. So we should say because Sunoco basically bought out Energy Partners, right, or merged with them or something like this.
And I know the people who are there. That's who like they have clients as is, you know, Sunoco and Energy Purpose. Right. And I'm not going to name the lobbyist on air, but I saw him in the Capitol the other day trying to put this fire out. And he makes some really good points at times, too. I mean, he said, like, you look at Wolf's energy initiative, he said, like, it's pretty much the same thing as Donald Trump's.
Yes.
And this is coming from a lobbyist.
Well, it's, yeah.
Like, it's just like, it's the same thing as Donald Trump's. Like no one's complaining about it because, you know, Tom Wolf is governor.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, we're complaining about it.
Yeah.
We're trying, doing what you can. But, yeah, it's pretty crazy. What, you know, this should underscore why this is actually important to name Sunoco as part of this, too, as well, is because Sunoco has had the most violations of any of the pipeline constructions of the companies in the state. Right. And they've been like, was the Mariner East 2 pipeline, which has been all sorts of violations and problems there. I forget the other one that had, there was all sorts of spills that were kind of associated with it. But this is just a perfect example. And then we see this once again. So we have to kind of, again, we're going to keep on coming back to this kind of stuff because we need to keep it in the frame and need to keep it in the narrative. Like, this is not just a one-off and this happened. These are things that are going to happen consistently and they're predictable. If you're going to do this kind of work in this state, this is what is going to happen. It is not the exception. It is part of the process. Explosions, spills, and poisoning of water is part of the production process of natural gas from fracking, period. Right, you can't have one without the other. That's the point. Right?
Okay. Yeah. And the infrastructure's not that great either.
Exactly. And with all this rain coming, who knows? You know, I remember, you know, I remember Hurricane Lee or something, Tropical Storm Lee. Was that the one that had all the crazy flooding?
Yeah.
So right up there. Okay. So I have family. I've talked about this before. Family up in the kind of Ricketts Glen area. Right. And when Lee went through, there was like 12 inches of rain fell in 24 hours. Right. And my wife's folks were up there already. And we were going up to join them because like, we had to work or, you know, through the week. So we're going up to meet them. And it was right after the rain came through. And, you know, frankly, we're like, oh, it's a lot of rain. But, you know, we didn't have a concept for it. We got up there and literally there were bridges, right? You know, concrete bridges with I-beam frames, right? That were twisted and turned out of the road, right? Because the water was so much. There was like huge sides of hills that were just like emptied of all their dirt and mudslides that had come down, right? And right along Route 118 going between from Wilkes-Barre out towards Ricketts Glen, right? And there were huge sections of the road that were impassable, that were completely ripped up and so on. Right now, They're lying, I think it's Sunrise something, I think it's a piece of the Sunrise pipeline. They're running part of that pipeline right parallel to the 118, exactly where we saw all that kind of destructive damage, right? That runs right along, right near Ricketts Glen State Park, right? It runs right along kind of Kitchen Creek, Pine Creek, right? All up in that area, right? And now we're getting all this rain coming again, right? It doesn't take a brain surgeon to kind of see that one thing is going to have a negative consequence against the other, right?
And especially if we're getting like 40 inches of rain in like the span of like 2 or 3 months.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, like we got as much rain up until like we basically hit like the yearly average right now. There's still months to go within a year. And it's like the ground's going to be soaked because of that.
Yep.
You know,
it's not going to be able to hold any more water. And that's what I mean. That's exactly what happened that one time. The ground was already saturated. Right? So there's no place for water to go. So basically the water gets in between like the soil and the rock. Right. And then it just slides it off.
Right? It goes straight downhill.
Yep. Exactly. I mean, again, this is, again, not complicated. Right. If you know anything about, you know, water. Right.
Water.
What?
Water.
No, woods on trees. So again, once we have that there, last I got to mention this, the teachers are on strike in the East Stroudsburg Area School District. And there was some renewed talks in the middle of the week, but no, they did not reach an agreement. They're going to remain closed for the rest of the week. That's kind of pretty there. They've been working without a contract for 2 years. Right. And, you know, basically what you've got, again, it's a story everywhere. Austerity measures being imposed, right? yes, there's kind of, you'll see that the school district has proposed kind of something like 11% pay increases, right? And that's what they're trotting out there saying, see, these teachers won't take this 11% pay increase over the life of the span of the contract. What they don't say is that they're going to take huge cuts into their medical insurance and kind of huge additional pays there, to the point where any kind of increase in wages is actually completely offset for medical costs, right? So what's interesting is that I was happy to see that some of the teachers, is basically what they're doing when they're kind of they're on the picket line, and when they come off the picket line, they're going into kind of soup kitchens and they're collecting food for to help stock food pantries, right? And making sure that they got staffing in certain areas in churches and things like this, so if kids need a place to go, they can get kind of food and move on there. And that's kind of, you know, that's the impact of what you saw in West Virginia and Oklahoma. So all, you know, power to our brothers and sisters up there in East Stroudsburg. So good luck. I hope they're going to reach a decent contract. And that's good. Last thing I want to mention today, I just got to give a little mold update, right?
Before that?
Yeah, go.
Oh, before we get into that, mind if I just give a quick update?
No, go.
There will be no, looks like the Pennsylvania House is canceling session days, and the Senate might follow as well.
That's right.
Because they do not want their members, the Republicans, to be taking hard votes on any child sexual abuse bills that come up between now and Election Day.
There you have it. This is what the good old Speaker of the House wants to do. Right. So what was offered as a rationale for this?
They don't want their members taking hard votes before the election.
They actually said that?
Pretty much, yeah. I think it, like, one of the newspapers, but...
Oh, my God.
That's not far from the truth.
No, it is not. It is not. So there you have it. So, you know, so instead of actually having some concrete legislation to kind of that could move forward and actually kind of progress, nope. We're going to
shut
down
until
the
next
sessions.
Year.
Yeah, we'll wait. We'll wait. Because there's no, like, you know, statute of limitations on anything, or there's no... You know, consequences for real people. It's just a game, Sean. It's just a game. Crazy.
Yes. I wanted to get that in there before the mole update.
Yeah, I'm not going to give a whole bunch on the mole today because, I think it's important to keep, you know, we'll come back and we're going to just kind of revisit this until the problem's fixed. And that's not going to happen anytime soon. So the mold update will just going to have to be a consistent part of this podcast. And let me be clear about something. It's like, you know, one thing that is like, yes, I'm talking about this because it is hitting my workplace and has been something that we have been fighting to get rectified for over a decade, right? And we finally just had enough, right? Especially this week, there was like several people, faculty members in my building, right? In Lytle Hall at the Kutztown University of Pennsylvania, that just were tipped over the edge. Right. And so they've been like putting up with the mold and putting up with the constant working in the building because of the roof wasn't fixed properly. So things are dripping all over the place. But this week it was accompanied by like a yellow jacket infestation. Right. So the point was that, and we used to have all these problems, and I'm not going to get into this right now. The story about what it took to get the yellow jacket stuff fixed like 6 years ago is just mind-boggling, like mind-numbingly ridiculous what it took to get there. But I'll leave that for
another
day. I
think I was there at that point.
Yes, you were. And it's like, I know what weep holes are on buildings now because of this. Just saying, right? So anyways, so yeah, so they're like, literally, I had to stop a class early this week, right? Because there was like, there's a yellow jacket in the room, right? And there's this one woman who's got, who's got stung pretty bad before. Well, I don't know if she was allergic to it or not, but she was definitely really troubled by it. And so, but as the class went on, like there's one, they're watching it, right? You're kind of just looking at it, whatever. But then there's the second one, and then there's a third one, and then there's a fourth one, and they're buzzing all over the place like crazy, right?
And this is the time where they go fucking haywire because, like, their biological clocks
exactly
are
running down. They're all like, winter is coming. Winter's are coming. Winter's coming. Right?
We're all going to be dead.
Right. We're all going to die. Eat while you can. Right. And so, yeah, they were literally going, they were going nuts. And so I canceled my, well, I didn't cancel my class. I had 15 minutes left in the class. I was like, okay, look, let's just get out of here. We can't, I mean, we're not going to be able to pay attention. So here's what you got to do, blah, blah, blah. We'll check it out. The next day, not in the room that I was in, but I think a different room, a faculty member got stung several times by, like, in class by these stuff. So you got the yellow jackets. There were some, like, faculty were just like, that's it. You can push me only so far, and then I'm going over the edge. That's it. What do we got to do here? Right. So, I mean, again, so it was once again, I go to work on Tuesdays and Thursdays. I teach early in the morning. So I go early. Right. So I was there about 7 o'clock in the morning on Thursday, and I go in and there's like, I don't know, 3 to 4 guys in there. Right. Outside contractors. Right. Who are in about 6 different offices removing tiles, right? And they've all got like protective masks on and everything like this. And so I go up, I want to find out, you know, what's going on. So I'm like, so hey, I'm like, the mold guys, they sent in the mold guys? And the guys are looking at me, they're going like, I'm going to talk. So I think, I don't know how long they had been there so far that day. But the reason why the outside contractors got called in is because you had some Ask Me folks who basically came over, right, who are, you know, work at the university kind of buildings and grounds. And they went over and saw all the mold and they say, no, we don't have the equipment. We don't have the safety equipment, right, yeah, to keep on doing this, right? Because we've done this multiple times, but this is going to negatively affect our health if we have to keep on doing this stuff. So they're like, no, we're not doing it unless we're provided with the equipment. So the university's solution is, of course, to go out and get some outside contractors to come in, right? And
let's say a nice respirator you got there, boy.
Yeah, exactly.
Jimmy, how much you guys sell that thing for?
Yeah, right. Exactly. So we've got – so basically, again, the problems continue, right? This week, I think because, in a sense, there's more public scrutiny to it. I mentioned last week that Mike Gambone, he basically had about 5 ceiling tiles, I believe, with mold on it because the administration had been telling the papers, had been telling faculty in different parts of campus that everything's fine. And there's a couple people who have got some issues, but that's it. And he said the problems are all fixed. They shouldn't be problem, you know, no big deal. Meanwhile, we walk in every day and there's a new leak. There's new mold growing someplace. So Mike was just like, all right, here we go. Pulled the ceiling tiles down, wrote the room numbers on them, the date that they were pulled down, and walked them over to the provost's office. Say, so you don't know about the problem? Here they are, right? The crazy thing about it, it's the same. We're running into the same issues that we have at other on other issues here. I've got this email chain, for example, so about a faculty member is basically he's got mold growing through the ceiling tiles in his office, right? And so he does what he's supposed to do. He sends it down to our department secretary who files a work order, right? The work order gets sent. And then, like, the next day or something like this, there's a response saying that the work order is now closed, right? So the problem has been rectified or something like, I can't remember the exact language, but the work order is now closed, meaning that it's been taken care of, right? Nothing had been done. So you walk in the next day in his room, the same mold, the exact same mold in the same exact places is there. Nothing was done because it couldn't have been done. And so they close it out, probably because they didn't have the safety equipment, right? Probably because they didn't have the safety equipment to take care of it. So they close it out, and it just, from the administration's perspective, that has gone away. And it was only because continued pressure for them to kind of say, oh, wait a minute. Okay, I guess we're going to have to do something, right? And you read the email chains, and it's hilarious, right, in a really dark sense, right, because people's health is being affected by it. But it's hilarious because you're just like, this can't be how things actually operate, right? This cannot be, right? But they are.
And so now then, people are going to make an inside mold jokes.
Inside mold jokes?
Yeah.
I was like, so this week, for example, finally, and you know what the worst part about it is that you've got some faculty members who are buying into the administration's hype and saying, well, we hear that most faculty are happy. We hear that most faculty don't have a problem with this, right? Faculty members who should give a crap, right, are basically saying, oh, you know, I guess it's just a few troublemakers over there in Lytle Hall, right? And, you know, again, that's like shorthand for like Mahoney and Gambone and a few other people. You know, it's like, and like, you know, say Amy Lynch Bidiak over there who's got all these problems. She's, you know, they put it off. There's like a few troublemakers as opposed to there's a health issue, right? So anyways, so this week, my highlight of the week, and I've got to just share this on the podcast. I put up photos on Facebook on this one. But I'm sitting there talking to Mike, actually, Mike Gambone, about, you know, we're just, something else. And I'm looking out in front of my office. I'm looking into the stairwell that's right across the main stairwell that's across the hall through the windows there. And I notice about halfway up, and again, it's like, you know, I'm on the second floor, so it's this kind of like circular, or like it's like a cylinder, like the stairwell. So I'm looking across it, and there's like this, like, it looks like somebody had patched part of the cement walls, because it's all just like concrete, right? Just, you know, cinder block walls. So it looks like somebody had like put like a big patchwork on it like that. I'm like, I just don't remember seeing that before. What the hell is that? So I go over to it, right, after that. I'm like, what is that thing? And I can't reach it because it's up too high. So I take my keys out, and I throw them at it, and the thing bursts like a water balloon, right? Water comes running down the wall, right? So basically what had happened, because they just fixed the roof on Lytle Hall, right? And by fixed it, I mean that they punched holes in it so it would leak more into the rest of the building. Right, so that the water is still getting into the roof and in the building, and it's dripping through the walls and getting behind the paint and bulging out the paint. So, and then you see the water dripping out, so you got to post this up. So, again, more posts go to social media, more complaints get filed. And so finally this week we had the provost and the dean and even the president of the university was over in our building kind of checking things out. So I kept on saying to people everything I saw. I was like, make sure you get a big, deep breath, everybody. Big deep breath, black mold. So yes, exactly.
It's like yoga. It's like yoga, right?
Suck it in, right? Make the mold part of you, right? Become the mold, right? Is what it is. So, you know, again, I have to say it sucks so much to have to do this, right? It's like, why not just take care of the problem? And I'm telling you, it kills a little piece of my soul every time that we've got to do this kind of stuff in order to get any kind of like reasonable response from the administration of the university. And I started to say early on, I said, yes, I know this is my building, and I know that there's kind of this is a local issue. But as we've been posting things, we've had other faculty members and other teachers from across the country that also post building of what's happening at their schools. Right, who are facing very similar kind of like, you know, like pressures, fiscal pressures and all this kind of stuff, other dynamics there. And then we just found out the Kutztown School District, right, the high school, I believe, they actually had to close down one because of mold. Right. And the question is, right, you know, a question I want to be putting to our own administration coming up now and to these other places, like, OK, so you keep on saying there's no problem. What's the acceptable level of mold that we can have that's good? So give us a number, like how much mold can we have till there's a problem? I just want a number, right, so that we can measure it. Right. What's the good amount of mold? Right. What's the healthy amount of black mold in your building? Right, for a workspace, right, and we'll see what they'll say. All right, so now what's to do? But that's the mold update for now. Look for some other fun stuff kind of coming forward with us posting all sorts of pictures. I've got some great pictures of another building called Beaky, where the ceilings are kind of have been collapsing because of again same issue. But then I was also in the brand new social media lab that's over there, that was just absolutely sparkling and beautiful. So remember, it's all about priorities, everybody. It's all about priorities. All right. So this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We'll be right back with today's last call and, you know, try to get the rain out of here. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull no punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast. It's the last call, where we talk about space news and we talk about beer and we talk about any other kind of thing that's kind of fun to talk about. A little bit more relaxed and kind of joyful moments that we have here. So start off just a couple quick things off the bat, right? Space news for today. SpaceX is going to announce on Monday about who will be on the big freaking rocket to travel around the moon for the first commercial trip, right? Nice little vacation, go out around the moon, right? Maybe hang out with, like, Elon Musk's robot other or something like that. I don't know. But we'll see what happens here. This is where the big play. You've heard me been talking about this for a while now. And I got to say, Sean, I don't know if you saw this week, but had some people write in about about my space news, right? Basically saying, look, here, capitalism takes over space exploration. Your predictions are coming true, right? And they pointed out to a Daily Coast article, which reporting on exactly the kind of stuff that I've been drawing attention to here, which basically says NASA is looking into selling naming rights on rockets, spacecraft, and missions. Right. So that you could have the, you know, BP mission to thing or the McDonald's station,
right? The JP Morgan Chase.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. So here you go. This was originally came out of a part of the Washington Post report. And we were tipped off from one of our listeners. So thank you once again for sending us that tip and that information. I love hearing feedback that we get from folks. So thanks for that. But the Elon Musk thing, this is going to be, Elon Musk has been on a bit of a tailspin lately. I don't know if everyone's seen that, but the guy's been kind of having a little crisis, and he's been getting some nice little, sympathetic write-ups about, like, poor Elon, like the billionaire who, like, feels stuff, right? Poor guy, right? He just wants to do good, right?
So did you see that, like, Tesla fired a union worker or a person with the union drive at one of the plants for testing positive for THC?
Yes.
While he went on TV, Joe Rogan's, and bullshit inhaled a joint the wrong way.
Exactly. Well, he just wanted to be, he wanted everything to be a little smoky like you've seen in the movies. That's why.
Yeah.
But no, this is a perfect example, right? I mean, these guys, look, like I've said this before, I get all contradicted about this stuff because for me, there's always been this awe stuff of kind of space exploration. And I have, when I think about NASA, right, NASA's had a special place in my heart from my whole life, as like when I grew up as a kid and stuff like that. You know, it was this thing that we could do. And I really think that was part of it. You know, my dad was a huge, like, Kennedy fan and that kind of JFK. And, that whole, I remember watching the films of, I wasn't alive yet when they actually launched and kind of went to the moon the first time, but watching the films of, like, saying we can do this and we can go to the moon and just kind of making that happen and people on the moon, it's just awe inspiring. And so that's kind of like where I come out of this stuff. So there's parts of me that, I think that this is a good thing, right? That this is the kind of stuff when you're talking about space exploration, you're talking about, even exploring the moon and all this kind of stuff. I mean, this is part, in my mind, of the human condition, if you will, right? And now I say that with a full recognition that, look, we've got to get our shit in order at home. I mean, you can't have this space program where people get to go to the moon and people starving at the same time. I mean, these things are deeply problematic, right? But I think, that's embedded in the nature of capitalism, the nature of runaway free market capitalism, neoliberal capitalism. And we're seeing that play itself out on the things like the moon. Like, the fact that you're having, like, commercial trips going around the moon, that now you've got Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos, right? competing over who's going to be establishing the first moon base is nuts. The fact that, you know, NASA's plans to put up like a space station that's actually going to orbit the moon, right? But now that's all kind of that's all in question about how that's actually going to be funded and who's going to control it, right? Are we as kind of like citizens going to be putting up our money just to get the thing built, the infrastructure built, so these corporations, right, can like milk us for it? Right. That's what it seems like. That's the trajectory we're going. Right. And as soon as that's, and I've said this before, as soon as Obama cut the shuttle program and started kind of welcoming in these outside contractors and these private interests to be able to take over rocket launches and stuff, that's what we opened the door for. Right. Every other kind of public private partnership, that's what we get in the end of it. So. And then you see, interestingly enough, and I've mentioned this a while back, there was a story that came up a while back. I haven't heard much about it, but Luxembourg is basically positioning itself to be like this new, like, commercial space hub, right? Little tiny country, right, that's kind of like controlled by, you know, like very few people. They've established now a space agency and a fund specifically for building the infrastructure and welcoming in kind of private interest to become this space hub. And they're, I mean, look, they're throwing their cards into, this new space industry, and they're trying to get out ahead of this by building out the infrastructure and so on. It's pretty crazy.
Where else we'll have a better place to do it than like the Alps?
Well, yeah, exactly.
Or the Pyrenees.
Exactly. Whatever.
I mean, come on.
I agree, man.
I mean, if I was going to be rich and had a lot of money and didn't have to worry about taxes, I mean, where else would I pick? Malta, yep. Luxembourg, like San Marino, like these small, like little places that exist where tax shelters.
Well, exactly, right? I mean, that's the thing, right? Luxembourg, you got these tax shelter stuff going on. You've got kind of tight, fairly kind of top-down control so that you've kind of like streamlined any kind of approval process, right? And now you've got like, I think it's Etienne, I think is how you say his name, Schneider. He's the deputy prime minister who's been advocating for this really, really hard. They have they've established the Luxembourg Space Agency, and the person running it is called, his name is Mark Sirius, and he's a CEO, right? Not a prime minister, not a kind of an official. No, he's a CEO. So they're going to run this as a business. So this is explicitly, right, government money being used to establish a for-profit space center in Luxembourg, right? You should check it out. If you're ever interested in this stuff, you can look up Luxembourg Space Agency. I think I just had the address for it. I'll just link it in the notes. But it's like spaceagency.lu or something like that, I think is what it might be. But you know, this is, oh, here we go. spaceresources.lu. Yeah, that was, okay, no, that was a little bit different, but the Space Resources LU is a project to attract companies working in the nation's space resources field, had led to 20 countries establishing their presence in the country. And he said, quote, "All this is why it's so important to me to launch today this Luxembourg Space Agency in order to professionalize our approach to this new community," meaning for-profit, like, space miners, right, is basically what they're looking at. So I'm telling you, science fiction is now real, folks, pay attention. So that's where our money and part of the money is going, and how these billionaires and trillionaires are going to establish their dynasties in the sky. So that's my fun news for the space news for today. Wasn't too painful, was it, Sean?
No,
not too bad. See, I told you. And Sean, I have to say, has actually, I don't know, and if he's turned a corner or something like this, but he's actually was like posting Star Trek memes this week. So maybe we just, with that whole talk of socialism in the future and Picard's anti-capitalism, maybe we're going to kind of bring you over into the Star Trek universe.
Maybe. Not sure.
And we'll spit that all out. Okay, well, beer news for the week. I've got some cool stuff. Once again, we've got Free Will has got more releases. I'm telling you, I don't know how you come out with so many releases all the time and for them being so good. One of them, they're coming out with a bottle release. I think it's Saturday. Let me just double check this for you. I believe this is on. Pull it up. They also got a bunch of other ones there. One is called the Pommisher, and the Pommisher is probably one of my most favorite sours that they got out there. It's a sour ale, aged in oak casks with pomegranate, and I just love this thing. And so when it comes out, I grab up a bunch of them. The other one that's coming out is called Sexy Goodies. It's a New England style double IPA. It comes out about 8.5%. And, those are both coming out on Saturday. So that's pretty cool. And this weekend, there's a festival that's going on, out at, what did I call it again? I always forget the name of this place. That's awful.
Peddler's Village?
Yeah, Peddler's Village. It's called the Scarecrow Festival.
The Scarecrow.
Have you been to that before?
Yes, I have.
Because you go up that way quite a bit. You used to go like all fruit picking and stuff up that way, right?
Yeah. So like we not that far out. Like we go above Doylestown.
Yeah.
On 611 to go do that. I've actually that was something we used to go to a lot when I was growing up as a kid.
Scarecrow Fest? Really?
Yeah. Yeah. You get like bales of hay. You make your own scarecrow and you bring it back and sit out front porch.
Oh, get out of here
for the season. Yeah.
I didn't know anything about it, so I'm glad you told me that, because now I'm going to bring my kids there.
It's a really popular thing. I mean, it's pretty big, and they have like artists making their own scarecrows, and so usually there would be like Wizard of Oz themed stuff and like stuff with the times and shit like that.
Very, very cool. Well, so check that out. That's going on kind of the festival is this weekend, right? The 15th, tomorrow and Sunday, and Free Will is going to be there for the festival. I just may have to kind of make my way out there. It's actually, the weather is supposed to break for a couple days before we get the remnants of Florence up this way too. So it might be a good weekend for it.
I didn't even realize that.
Yeah. I'm supposed to. I don't know if it's going to get, you know, nice, but at least it's not going to be like, you know, raining for a change. That'll be good. So there's that. So also kind of thank you to Tony. Tony's great. Tony always sends us tips and kind of stuff he's thinking about and kind of links to articles and things like this. And he's been following us like all the way through in the podcast and stuff. And if you recall, a few weeks back, we got a tip about a new brewery that opened up in Pottsville. That right around Pottsville, where kind of challenging Yingling, and we kind of made mention of that on the show. Well, Tony said, hey, guess what? You know, just sent us this week. There's one more challenger to Yingling out there called Stoker Brewing Company. It opened up in Tamaqua, right? Which is really cool. It actually just opened up at the end of the summer. It looks like a really cool place. And what was fascinating, I started watching some of the stories around the startup of Stoker Brewing Company and all that. And apparently there's a bunch of these like kind of crafty places where they're craft coffee and things like that's actually springing up in Tamaqua, which is fascinating, because Tamaqua is one of these areas that was kind of, you know, devastated after the kind of the extraction industries and all that kind of stuff. But check it out. I have not been there, but here's the kind of cool thing, right? They're sponsoring what they're calling, I believe it's, I got this right, Smoketoberfest. And I'm just going to read you their description, because it's going to make my mouth water, right? And it's also, you know, my wife's family, like they're all Polish and stuff. So I think I'm going to see if I can get to drag them out there. We'll see. If not for this day, another time. But it says, get your smoke on. Craft beer and food pairing at its finest, featuring two Schuylkill County's best. Choose from a menu featuring Kowalniks, I think. Kowalniks' famous smoked kielbasa and sauerkraut, or kielbasa mac and cheese, and kielbasa sampler packs that pair perfectly with Stoker Brewing's company's Stokerla smoked ale. A match made in beer and kielbasa heaven. Right, so that'll be kind of featuring it up there, which is that sounds like a whole lot of fun. And, you know, the fact that they're branding it too as well as kind of like Stoker Brewing Company, because the Stokers were, of course, the people that fed the coal into the trains and stuff to keep the steam engines going. And that's kind of their under logo. But do check them out if you're up that way. Thank you again to Tony for alerting us of this. And go check out Stoker Brewing Company and tell them you heard about us on Raging Chicken's Out to Coop podcast. That'd be awesome. I'd love to let them know that we're kind of keeping out for looking for local stuff and support the kind of, you know, the efforts that they have there. The other thing that just kind of a total side note, Tony also sent a link this week that said that he just did some kind of background research that before 1965, Schuylkill County had four major breweries, right? Yuengling, of course, right? You know, anti-worker horror show that is. But then also one called Mount Carbon, that was in Pottsville, Kayers, which was in Mahanoy City, and Columbia, which is in Shenandoah. And then Yuengling bought out Mount Carbon and then shut it down, right? And then the others closed by the mid-1960s. So that's just kind of an interesting thing. And he kind of makes an interesting point. So, yeah, this is what you got to do is you got to go kind of go local, right? So that you can only get this stuff local to kind of feed the local economy. Because the minute you start getting this kind of like this export economy model, then that's it. So his suggestion is we take this up on a future free range podcast. And Colleen and I might just do that. We were supposed to have our kind of little meeting this week, but I'm telling you, the past several weeks, right, since about the second week of August has just been nuts for me. And so Colleen and I keep on, like, our schedules keep on going in opposite directions. So sooner or later, we're going to have a next episode of Free Range out for you, too, as well. So Sean, anything else for the good of the order, man? Anything else going on this weekend?
No, nothing really is up. Just lounging around this weekend, getting ready for the Eagles game on Sunday.
There you go. It's going to take a whole weekend to do that, apparently.
Yeah.
You're going to do a bunch of porch sitting over the next couple of days?
Yep, and beer drinking.
Porch sitting and beer drinking. Sounds good, man. All right, man. Well, I guess that pretty much wraps it up for another episode of Out the Coop. Sure, Sean? Nothing else? Nothing else fun for the day?
No, that's it.
Just messing with you. All right. Well, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. I want to thank you all for tuning in to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. Remember, become a member, patreon.com/RCPress. It's $5 a month. See ya!
Did this happen?
The American dream is dead. Stop resisting.
The president's powers here are beyond question.
Ladies and gentlemen, the last president of the United States.